And we're back here at the Push to Talk Hour with air traffic controllers in both the U.S. and Europe. I'm talking with Bob Knowles from
Evansville.
Stateside, well, Evansville, yeah. This side of the pond. And we've got Lutz here from Germany, who's been telling us about the division of airspace and a little bit about the differences and how that's run. Mm-hmm. You were starting to say something just before we went to break. Did we lose it
in the
train of thought from the...
Maybe
go ahead.
Okay, I thought maybe what would probably be more interesting is the GA in Germany, especially looking at the EAA. I'm actually building an aeroplane in Germany as well, and I've been an EAA member for close on 15 years. And just to give you some target figures, there's an organization in Germany that actually covers home building called the Oscar Osinus Verein. And I'm not quite sure if the number is right, but I think there's about 234 home builds flying in Germany. I think that's the number I remember from the last time I looked. And that just gives you kind of an idea of the scope of how much home building is going on in Germany. Now, there's 82 million people and there's 240 home builds.
Yeah.
So the home build movement is pretty much dead. If you build, I mean, I'm in my village that I live in, everybody thinks I'm nuts. And that, so home building is really not a big deal. And people look at home builders very strangely. I keep in touch with a couple of guys that are building the same kind of plane as I am. And they all got the same stories. Like, everybody thinks we're crazy. And so we have to come out here to experience home building, because really in Germany the home building scene is pretty much dead, and there's no movement. You look at the guys doing it and it's pretty much old guys. They're way past 60, and I think when this generation dies out, there's going to be a huge problem. There's just nobody interested anymore. There's no push, there's no drive, there are no programs, and that's a pretty sad state of affairs. And so yeah, we pretty much come out here to experience home building and actually see things. Just to give you an idea of getting anything for home building, I spent half the time looking for things when I build. You know, where do I find this? I can get it from Spruce, but apparently when things cross that little piece of water that separate us, the price goes up about 10 times. So the freightage normally ends up being
more than the part. Huh?
Yeah, well, I ordered some, just to give you a ballpark figure, I ordered some glue a while back, and the glue was like $40. By the time it got delivered to my door, I had a bill for $130 postage and freight and import duties and taxes and whatever for a $40 item, you know. And I said, well, so if you get high price stuff, it's not too bad. But the minute you get small things, you just pretty much, you're stuck out. So you come to EAA and you bring a big suitcase, and I've had people go home with Piper tires and winglets and strobe lights.
Well, I was going to say, if you, I don't know, the shipping is coming out of the countries, or you know, out of the companies, I mean, these costs, if you had a buddy that lived here, could they grab these small items and
package? I've actually got a good friend who's a Lufthansa captain, and I have some friends here, and you can do it, but there's obviously there's import, and there's import duties, and the things have to be taxed. A lot of the time it's just also a bit of a hassle, because I got to get the stuff from Spruce to go somewhere, and then time coordination, when are you coming across, can you bring it with. And I know when I travel, I mean, when I came over here,
or can you ship it just from private individual and put,
well,
it
in the shipping costs are pretty much the same. If you ship any items, you do it with UPS or FedEx or whatever. You can choose to ship by sea freight, which is, I actually had a guy down in Florida make me some canopies, because this was one thing I couldn't find in Germany. At least I could find a canopy, but the cost was just out of control. And through the EAA and the internet, I found a company. It was actually a guy who works down in Florida, and he makes canopies. So I phoned him up and I said, listen, can you make me a canopy for my plane? And he's like, yeah, send me the stuff and I'll work with you. And he said, it's a good thing you just called me, because I'm making two canopies for another German guy who lives up in Hamburg. And he said, you know, I'll just put them in a crate and we'll ship them over. So he got it done. Great guy, great service. Worked out really well. He got these canopies in. And the canopies, it came to like $400. And we got the box of canopies. There were four canopies in there. And just my share of the freight came to like $600. So it was like $200 more than the canopies cost, just to get them over there and get them through customs and get them taxed and, you know, the whole thing.
All of the canopies together.
Yeah, and it was one box with four canopies in, you know. Uh-huh. So that's just, the cost is just, and even then, which is the sad thing, it was still way cheaper than getting it done back home.
Wow.
So yeah, GA in Germany is general aviation is dying out, really. I know the people here complain about the gas price. So for your listeners who really, we're playing about $15 for a gallon of F-gas at the moment.
Right. Yeah, I know Europe's had that problem a long time, but I was just in Mexico a couple of, maybe about a month or a month and a half ago. And this is automotive fuel. And compared to here, it's $2.80 a gallon. On the other side of the border, it's $4.80. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, well, when I left, we were paying €1.60 a liter, which I'm going to ballpark is around $10 a gallon just for automotive fuel.
Right.
So, of course, that impacts general aviation. One of the other costs is we have landing fees. So when I go out flying, I fly a motor glider out of a flying club just south of where I live. And you pay €5.70. So what, about $7 per landing? I've had days where I've done 5-6 touch and goes, and I've spent more money paying for the landings than I have for the actual flying hour. So you factor all of that in, and flying is becoming, well, it's not becoming, it is an expensive business, and that's why it's dying out. It's people just can't afford to they can't even afford baseline flying. You can't fly a Cessna anymore. It's just getting out of control. We have a Cessna in our flying club, and it's $150 an hour if you convert it.
Right.
You know, and $150 an hour is a lot of money. And so people just don't fly anymore. And it's just getting less and less and less. The home-built movement is pretty much gone and died out.
What about gliders and ultralights?
Gliders are a big thing. I mean, Germany is probably worldwide one of the leaders in glider manufacture, and also they love to fly gliders. One of the things is gliding in Germany is a club activity. In Germany, we say a Verein. It has a special status in terms of taxation and how they can move their money around, which is why we have a lot of these guys. And gliding involves work. So what they'll do is they'll get the youngsters involved in, well, you got to come on out for the weekend, you got to push the gliders out, pull them in, take the wings off, put the wings on, and then we'll give you a couple of flights, and that's how they get to their licenses. But you got to be really dedicated and motivated to go down that road. And we do have youngsters who do that, but not many. So that's a big thing. Ultralight is a big movement in Germany. The ultralight is really the thing that saved general aviation. We have a lot of ultralights flying around. A lot of people are moving towards ultralight, especially because our ultralight category, what you have as LSA here, that pretty much covers our ultralights. We don't have an LSA category. And the planes coming out these days, I mean, we have an ultralight in a neighboring hangar. That thing will run 160 knots. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's got a retractable undercarriage, variable pitch. It goes like a bat. And, I mean, it'll leave our Cessna 182 standing.
So do you see that continuing, at least, in terms of general aviation or the sport, the hobby of flying?
What we're trying to do now, we have a new organization, just for a change, we've got a new organization in Europe called the EASA, which is going to take over everything involved with aviation. We're not sure whether it's going to be dealing with the ultralights. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work out. They want to get an LSA category here in Germany, but I think the ultralight movement has pretty much peaked in terms of speed, because a lot of people want speed, and there's just so much. There's a weight restriction on these planes. You're not allowed to. The weight restriction is 472.5 kilograms. I'm at, what is that, about 1,100 pounds? So.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, well, yeah. I can work it out in a sec. Let's just say it's about 1,100 pounds. And 1,100 pounds means you've got two pilots, the aeroplane, the fuel, maximum takeoff weight. Now, the planes empty will normally weigh in at around, if they're these high-tech planes, I mean, I'm talking about go-fast, retractable undercarriage planes, you're probably looking between 280 and 300 kilos empty weight. So that's around 700 pounds. So your load factor, really, it's single-seaters. And they get built with two seats, but effectively, and if you want to keep them legal, you have to fly them single-seater. And there was a big movement a while back where the government actually, or the oversight agency, would actually go out to airfields and weigh these things. They'd get the pilots get out, and they'd put the thing on scales, and then they'd get the pilots on the scales, and then they'd say, oh, well... Sorry, but, you know, what do you weigh? Like 230 pounds? Well, you know, you can't even fly the thing alone legally, never mind with anybody else.
Gracious.
So I think we've pretty much, in terms of where we can go with that, we've reached the end of the line. If we want to go beyond that, we're going to have to either go the LSA road or stick with the normal aircraft category that we have now. And ultralight flying, I think, the trend that I'm getting in Germany, it's going back to grassroots and keeping it simple. And because the cost is much lower, the operating costs are lower.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there's a more of a movement back towards ultralight, and I think that'll probably keep.
Now, are the ultralights subject to any kind of user fees or anything?
Well, you pay the same everywhere. The user fees in terms of airspace usage, we don't pay anything to use the airspace. What we do pay for is you pay for weather briefings, you pay to put in a flight plan. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I fly around. I hardly ever file flight plans. You need to file flight plans when you go into other countries. If you fly on over to France or so, there's certain restrictions, and often, like in Spain, anytime you fly in Spain, VFR, you have to file a flight plan.
Right.
Greece is the same thing. We have a deal with France at the moment where we can fly without filing. You don't pay for that. You'll pay for the weather briefing if you want. Mm-hmm. You will pay for landing fees, and that's really that's the kicker that'll take it, is the landing fees. And the landing fees are structured according to the weight of the aeroplane, the noise that the aeroplane makes. Ballpark figure, we have an airfield just south of where I live. There's called Shpaya. I did a landing with a U.S.-registered Cherokee 6 one time, and the landing fee was like $45. Now, if I landed there with my motor glider, it probably cost about $8. So it depends. They normally say up to 2 tons, the fee is a flat rate.
Uh-huh.
And then depending on how the noise with the engine, you get a special stamp. And if it's not so noisy, then you can get away with a cheaper fee.
Well, that's always been my opposition to the user fees, and it's more as a controller. It's the more you start charging people for little things here and there, and you start nickel and dime on them, they're going to quit paying for them, and they're compromising safety.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we found in Germany. And fortunately, as a center controller, I don't have to deal much with VFR anymore. When I started out, I had to work as a flight information. It's a separate service that we provide for VFR pilots. And it was the bane of my life. I used to work flight information. It was like the curse of the, you know, when you got to work in the morning, you got 3 hours of flight information on a Saturday morning and the weather was good. And it's like, well, shoot me now and drag me out. Because what ends up happening is, flying is expensive, so what's the first thing people do?
Right.
They don't fly much. And we have a lot of pilots, and I'm one of them, who really just keep their licenses current with a minimum amount of flying time. And if you then add in the factor of, for instance, ATC, pilots don't like to talk on the radio in the best of times, and then these German pilots, they don't talk to, or they hardly ever talk on the radio, because they're only flying 10, 15, 20 hours a year.
Right.
I'm just generalizing it. I'm sure it's not for everybody, but for a greater part. And these guys will come on, they're too scared to actually use the service that's available to them, because we have flight information service and we have it run by great people. They really know what they're doing and they do provide a good service. But the people won't, and the service is free, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The people won't use it because they're too scared. And I sit in the flying club and I'm going, well, why are you not calling flight information when you get stuck out? Oh, I can't call those people. They're too scary. And I actually get the flying club members. I take them to work and I introduce them to the flight information specialists and say, well, these are the people. They're just guys, you know, and girls.
Right.
They're not like monsters. We're not going to eat you. They're there to help you out. You know? We're providing a service. And the pilots are just, they get into a panic. And then you combine the little flying they do,
mm-hmm.
the fact that they hardly ever talk on the radio, and it's a recipe for disaster. And we have pilots getting lost in Germany, which is, I mean, it's like a miracle to get lost in Germany, because it's so small, you don't really,
yeah.
There's not really much place. There's big airfields all over, and really you pretty much have to lose it to get lost in my neck of the woods.
Well, if you run into the mountains, you know if you've gone too far. If you get over the water, then you've gone too far.
Well, where I'm at, I'm on the Rhine River, and I mean, you just keep going east or west until you hit the big water, and then you know that's the Rhine River. And then you go north or south, and if you get the big mountains, you're in Switzerland. And if you go the other way around, then you know you're good.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's pretty simple. Nevertheless, the guys just don't use the services, and their flying skills are poor. And let me say again, I include myself in that category. I spend most of the time flying with the flight
instructor. Practice makes perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's happening, is people just, and these kind of people, they become a danger to themselves and to others. We have airspace infringements because pilots just don't know what's going on. And when they get into trouble, they'll get into the Frankfurt airspace, and they're just too scared to say anything. And I always say to them, well, just call the controller, because hell, it's better you call us. You know, it's not going to end up good on your resume when they scrape you off the front of a 747, which we've had happening, real near misses with 747s getting out of Frankfurt and guys flying through the localizer and through the extended center line. And I'm always saying, you know, just talk to the controllers. We're there to help you, and we'll help you out.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to take another break here. You are listening to EAA Radio.